Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 1, Text 23. Vasudeva Grihe Sakshad. Vasudeva Grihe Sakshad. Whoops. He's getting there. Okay. Bhagavan Purushapada. Bhagavan Purushapada. Janishyate tat priyartam. Janishyate tat priyartam. Sambhavantu surastriya. Sambhavantu surastriya. Vasudeva grihe sakshad. Bhagavan purushapada. Janishyate tat priyartam. Sambhavantu surastriya. Vasudeva grihe sakshad. Vasudeva grihe sakshan Bhagavan purushapada Janishyate tat priyartam Sambhavantu surastriya. Vaishnavis. Vasudeva grihe sakshan Bhagavan Purushapada Janishyate tat priyartam Sambhavantu surastriya. Okay, Vasudeva Grihe. In the house of Vasudev, who would be the father of Krishna when the Lord appeared. Sakshat, personally, Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has full potency, Purusha, the original person, Para, who is transcendental, Janishyate, will appear, Tat Priya Artam, And for his satisfaction, Sambhavantu should take birth Surastriya, all the wives of the demigods. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who has full potency, will personally appear as the son of Vasudev. Therefore, all the wives of the demigods should also appear in order to satisfy him. Okay, so this is Lord Brahma speaking, and he's speaking to the demigods. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 9, the Lord says, Tyaktva deham punar janma naiti mam eti. After giving up the material body, the devotee of the Lord returns home, back to Godhead. This means that the devotee is first transferred to the particular universe where the Lord is, at that time staying to exhibit his pastimes. In other words, he doesn't go directly right back to the spiritual world. There are innumerable universes, and the Lord is appearing in one of these universes at every moment. Therefore, his pastimes are called Nitya Lila, eternal pastimes. The Lord's appearance as a child in the house of Devaki takes place continuously in one universe after another. Therefore, the devotee is first transferred to that particular universe where the pastimes of the Lord are current. Now, pay close attention here because Prabhupada's about to throw us a curveball right now in this purport, okay? So here we go. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, even if a devotee does not complete the course of devotional service, he enjoys the happiness of the heavenly planets where the most pious people dwell. So it sounds like all of a sudden Prabhupada's changing what he's talking about here in midstream. Right up till this point, he's talking about how if a devotee is pure devotee, he goes to the place where Krishna, the universe, a place in the universe where Krishna's performing his pastimes, and he gets trained up, and then after that he goes back to the spiritual world. Now all of a sudden Prabhupada's talking about a devotee that doesn't complete the course of devotional service. What happens to him? And he says he enjoys happiness in the heavenly planets where the most pious people dwell, and then takes birth in the house of a Suchi or a Sriman, a pious Brahmin, or a wealthy Vaishya, Suchinam, Srimatam, Gehe, Yoga, Brahmastra, Prajayate. So what's the connection between the two? You know, it seems like two different things. All of a sudden he's talking about one thing, and now he's talking about something else. Okay, here we go. The next sentence, Prabhupada says, thus, a pure devotee, even if unable to execute devotional service completely, is transferred to the upper planetary system where the pious people reside. From there, if his devotional service is complete, such a devotee is transferred to the place where the Lord's pastimes are going on. So, it appears from this that somebody could be a pure devotee, but still unable to execute devotional service completely. So that might sound like a contradiction. You might be thinking, when you hear that, you might think, wait a second, I thought if you're a pure devotee, that means you've executed devotional service completely and you're eligible to go back to home, back to Godhead. Okay? Well, it seems like Prabhupada is not using the phrase pure devotee in this particular context in that sense. And there, it's not inconsistent. There is, for instance, what I'm saying is it's possible to be a pure devotee, but not necessarily to be totally free from all material contamination. There's another, unfortunately, I'm able to remember another very good example of this. Prabhupada uses this phrase pure devotee in the same way. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a phrase where a place, I can't remember the exact text and, reference there, but he says that if one accepts that the holy name of Krishna is non-different from Krishna, the person Krishna, then one is to be, that person should be accepted as a pure devotee, even though he may be in the neophyte stage. So once again, that sounds like a, how could he be a pure devotee and be in the neophyte stage? it depends how you're using it, what your definition is of pure devotee. So it sounds like in that one, in that reference I just cited, and in this particular purport, Prabhupada's using the word pure devotee to mean somebody who's fully committed, you know, who's totally accepted, yes. He's accepted the Siddhanta. He's accepted, yes, Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I'm his eternal servant. I have to surrender fully to Krishna and engage in his devotional service, etc., etc. That person has accepted that, right? But they might not be completely purified yet. They might not be completely free from all material contamination. But that person is to be accepted as a pure devotee, somebody who has that conviction and is acting upon that. And Prabhupada gives the example, gave the example in his class, it's just like a person who goes into the shower. You know, if somebody goes into the shower, you consider them a clean person. You don't consider them a dirty person, you see? Although, you know, when they're only 10, 15, 20, 30 seconds into the shower, they still might be kind of dirty because they haven't had a chance yet to, you know, do everything they need to do. But you give them the benefit of the doubt. Okay, you're a clean person. You're in the shower. So it's understood that it's just a matter of a couple minutes and you're going to be completely clean. So in the same way, somebody could be a pure devotee and not completely be totally washed clean of all the material contamination. And that's why it's mentioned here, a pure devotee might be unable to execute devotional service completely, might not be completely purified, so that person is transferred to the upper planetary system where pious people reside. And then after they become further purified, then from there, it says, if his devotional service is complete, as when you become more purified or completely purified, then that devotee is transferred to the place where the Lord's pastimes are going on. So that's my understanding of that, what we just heard here. Okay? That makes sense to everybody? Okay. So then Prabhupada goes on. Herein it is said, Sam bhavantu surastriya. Surastri, the women of the heavenly planets, were thus ordered to appear in the Yadu dynasty in Vrindavan to enrich the pastimes of Lord Krishna. So it sounds like they're being given as an example of such devotees who are in that category. And these Surastri, when further trained to live with Krishna, would be transferred to the original Goloka Vrindavan. During Lord Krishna's pastimes within this world, the Surastri were to appear in different ways and different families to give pleasure to the Lord, just so that they would be fully trained before going to the eternal Goloka Vrindavan. With the association of Lord Krishna, either at Dwarka Puri, Mathura Puri, or Vrindavan, they would certainly return home, back to Godhead. Among the Surastri, the women of the heavenly planets, there are many devotees, such as the mother of Upendra, the mother of the Upendra incarnation of Krishna, Aditi. Doesn't say her name, but that's who it is. It was such devoted women who were called for in this connection. Jai. Om Aganatam Nanda Shajan Anjana Shalaka Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasma Shigurave Namaha. So I'm going to raise a question, which I'm not going to answer, but we can take at the end of the class. And that question is, I had the impression as I'm reading this, I was always under the impression that when you go to the heavenly planets, that you're just using up the results of your past pious activities. But apparently it sounds like here that, you know, you're able to engage further in devotional service in the heavenly planets. So probably that was just a misconception I had. But anyway, we can maybe discuss that at the end. But going to the what Prabhupada says here, something in the purport, to get some further clarification. So it says here, there are innumerable universes, and the Lord is appearing in one of these universes at every moment. So what's the correct way to understand that? Does that mean, because a moment is generally speaking, that's a moment. So does that mean at every second, basically, that Krishna is appearing in another universe and, you know, kicking off another whole lila, you know, set of his pastimes? Let's see, is there any other thing here he says here? He says, the Lord's appearance as a child in the house of Devaki takes place continuously in one universe and after another. So basically the question I'm raising here is, is it that at every second, Krishna's appearing in another universe and taking birth as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki, you know, Or is it that he starts in a universe, does the whole show, you know, the whole 125 years of past times, and then when that's all finished, then it goes on to the next universe. Okay? Archit is shaking his head. No. How many are in the first camp? How many go with, at every second, Krishna's starting his pastimes in another universe? Okay, how many go that, with the idea that after he finishes all his pastimes in this universe, you know, 125 years with, then he, you know, just like he wraps it up, and then he moves on to the next universe. How many go with that one? I notice Judhakarma has not raised his hand, so he might have a third one. He doesn't know. Okay, I don't know either. Yeah, well, well, anyway, I don't think Judhakarma. I'm gonna follow in the footsteps of Judhakarma and say I don't know. But I just want to present one thing, and then I'll take a couple since I've stimulated some discussion here. Depends what your definition of moment is, for one thing. There is that pastime in the Bhagavatam. We read it recently in the ninth canto, where King Kakudmi wanted to get his daughter married, Revati, and he went up to see Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma. It was announced that they were there, and he said, okay, tell him to hang on, tell him to wait, because I'm listening to this music recital. And apparently, you know, that took about 45 minutes or whatever, and then Lord Brahma came to speak to them. 45 minutes of his time had passed, and King Kakudmi submitted his request that I'd like to get my daughter married to such and such person, you know, can you help us out with that? And Lord Brahma laughed, and he went, ha, 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 you know, actually, that person and all his descendants and their descendants and their descendants, they've passed away so long ago, nobody even remembers their names. So forget about it. And he just told him, don't worry, don't feel bad. You go down to earth now and you can get your daughter married to Balaram. That'll be a much better deal anyway. But the point is that, you know, according to Lord Brahma's time, it was only 45 minutes of Lord Brahma's time, but apparently, like, I think it was many millions of years had passed during that, you know, 45 minutes of Lord Brahma's time. So in other words, what I'm saying is, it says the Lord is appearing in one of these universes at every moment. So my question is, whose moment? If it's our moment, well, it's possible, because anything's possible for Krishna, but it's certainly pretty inconceivable. If it's one of Lord Brahma's moments, then it's not. It's kind of conceivable. I mean, Lord Brahma's moment is many, many, many years of ours. So it could be at every one of Lord Brahma's moments, then, okay. But that's the only additional light and insight I can throw onto that topic. We'll let Archer to make a brief comment, and then we'll continue on.
Well, since you brought it up, and yeah. Jai Govinda Prabhu made that statement. A devotee wrote to Srila Prabhupada asking this specific question about in relation to Arjuna and Krishna. He said, Prabhupada, you said that every moment Krishna's pastimes is going on in another universe. Is it the same Arjuna that's appearing with him? And Prabhupada said, yes. So the devotee's mind was blown, because normally we have heard that the individual jiva can expand up to 9 times. But they're all doing the same thing, each expansion. Exactly the same thing. It's not like Krishna, when he expands it, he can do different things with each expansion. But it seems that in this particular case with Arjuna and Krishna, Arjuna is being allowed to expand unlimitedly, practically. So that's the mind-blowing aspect. And in terms of your speculation about moments, if you're saying that it's one of Krishna's moments, then there wouldn't be any universe to go to, because with Krishna's moment, everything wraps up. He breathes out, he breathes in, and everything is done. That's a moment for Krishna.
Yeah.
So there wouldn't be any universe for him to go to, because there wouldn't be any universe left. At every moment he breathes out, he breathes in, and everything's gone.
Yeah. Well, like Judhakarma said, I don't know. But anyway, one last comment, then we'll go on. Yeah, Prema Sankirtan.
I just hear a lecture from Srila Prabhupada.
Okay.
And he particularly said, and I just write down, where is this lecture? I don't know, I have it in my room. I was thinking to bring here. So he said that in every second, Krishna appeared.
At every second?
Yeah, I just hear from Srila
Prabhupada. Okay. We'll take it at that. Now, in any event, it says here there are innumerable universes. In that first part of that sense, there are innumerable universes, and the Lord is appearing in one of these universes at every moment. So as far as the innumerable universes go, Dr. Krepp would most likely not accept that statement. Dr. Krepp is the director of the Griffith Observatory, who I had the pleasure of meeting on several occasions now. He's actually quite an interesting fellow. He's about mid-60s, and he's a bit of a character. He drives these old 1960 cars. At first, I thought he just had one, but I've been paying a little closer attention, and I've noticed three different ones already. They're not vintage cars. You know, it's not like, you know, the ones you see out on the Culver thing when they have that special day when they, no. They're just regular old 1960s. They're not jalopies either. He kind of keeps them okay, but they're not, you know, all shiny and everything like that. And I've seen three different ones already. And he has his own special parking place that he pulls in, you know, and he just, right in the front there, and he just tootles out with his briefcases and everything and around the back of the observatory into his office. So the other day I, you know, saw him come in, so I thought, I saw him, you know, pull in, so I thought I'd go over and say hello, you know, because I, as I said, I've talked to him a few times now about different things, and I said, hey, Dr. Krepp, hello, welcome, you know, good to see you, how's it going? And they said, oh, good. And I said, so, you know, so I, just, you know, I made small talk with him for a couple minutes. I said, so, you know, see, we're in our area here. He said, oh, yeah, no problem. I, that's good. And I said, so you're an astrophysicist, right? I said, is that, you know, I assume that you're astrophysicist. He says, yeah, yeah. I said, so I think I'd already previously asked him about how long you've been doing it and everything. So, so what is your, I mean, is your understanding the Big Bang? I mean, you know, what's you know, I think first I asked him if he'd written any books. He said he'd got about a half a dozen books out. Said some were in print, some were not in print, and blah, blah, blah. And so then I said, so, you know, as an astrophysicist, what's your understanding of the origin of the universe? I said, is it the big, you know, Patley couldn't get the words out of my mouth. He said, yep. Yeah, he said, Big Bang, Big Bang. We have observational evidence. That was his phrase. That was his comment. We have observational evidence. Now, this is, don't bear in mind that this is like a conversation that's going on as we're walking from his car to the back of the observatory where he used his, you know, like a plastic key to, you know, get himself in there, about a distance of like maybe 100 meters. So he said, yeah, we have observational evidence. So I didn't get a chance to ask him. I did, rather than ask him, well, what is that evidence? I just, my next question was, so what's the idea then? I mean, Big Bang, is it like a point of infinite density? And then once again, he kind of cut me off and he said, yeah, infinite density, but zero volume. And I went, I looked, and he could see I looked a little bit like, wow, infinite density. And he said, well, you know, he said, with our human brains, it's really hard to understand, but when you bring in quantum mechanics and it becomes more understandable, something like that. And then basically he just swiped his key and went in. You know, went in. He said, have a nice day. And I said, yeah, okay. And that was that. So afterwards I was thinking about it. You know, I wish I was more sharp because I, you know, I could have taken more advantage of that opportunity. But I'd like to actually meet him again and invite him as a special guest of honor to the Govinda's restaurant because he's a nice guy. He's friendly, you know. And have him sit down, introduce him to Drew DeKarma, and just be able to sit there at the table and hear the conversation. That would be ecstasy for me. But hopefully Krishna will fulfill that desire, we'll see. But in any event, so I was thinking about what he said. And, you know, okay, so first of all, I could have challenged him on the point. He said, we have observational evidence. And what is that observational evidence? I mean, Sariputta wrote a book, Vedic Cosmography and Astronomy. And so in the back of the book, one of the last chapters, or maybe it was the appendix, I'm not sure, he talked about this whole Big Bang idea, and he made the point that the physicists believe that they've observed a change in the spectral lines, you know, like a redshift in the light of this coming from the spectral lines. I'm just repeating like a parrot what I was remembering. I don't actually understand any of this stuff. And they interpret it as a Doppler effect. That means, you know, from what they saw, they're interpreting that, well, this means that everything's moving away from each other. So that means if it's moving away from each other, it must have started from an explosion, something like a rapid expansion, not an explosion, but a rapid expansion event must have been the origin of that, and now everything's moving away. So that's, you know, what, you know, an explanation. But Sariputta pointed out in his, you know, review of that, that there could be another explanation. There could be other explanations. And in fact, indeed, other astrophysicists have offered other explanations which seem equally as plausible. So I would challenge, I think you can't be too quick to accept that We have to challenge that observational evidence. You know, that was his point. We have observational evidence. Well, what is that observational evidence? And let's really look at it carefully. And let's really see, is it a fact that it cannot be interpreted in any other way? That we have to come to the conclusion that, you know, it's you know, definitely saying that, yes, it had to be this a rapid expansion event? Okay, that's point one. Point two is, okay, let's give him the benefit. For argument's sake, let's say that, yeah, that there was, that was the origin of the universe, you know, a point of infinite density, zero volume, okay? All right, well, what's the cause of that point? And are you trying to tell us that that point, that infinite density and zero volume point is the ultimate, the absolute causeless cause of all causes? Where's your observational evidence for that? Of course, it cannot have any observational evidence for that. There's no observational evidence for that, okay? So that's a, and that's a very significant point, you see? So since they cannot provide observational evidence, you know, that this particular point, if that really is the, you know, origin, is the causeless cause of all causes, okay, then why should I abandon my inclination to, you know, to... Or yeah, my inclination to take worship or take shelter of a personal supreme being, a god, you know, a being that is the causeless cause of all causes. No good reason. There's no good reason. See, so that's you know, that's something I was kind of dwelling on over the last 2 or 3 days since I had that conversation with him. So. And then I was reflecting also on, like, the, you know, where is their knowledge coming from? Their knowledge is coming from people who've got a lot to, you know, gain by disseminating, you know, getting you to buy into their ideas on a material level. Whereas our knowledge is coming from people who they've sacrificed everything material, you know, to practice this and give it to others. Like is that in the Sad Goswami Astika, there's that verse, Chakva Turanam Ashesha Mandalapati Shrenim Sadat Tuchavat Bhutva Dina Ganeshiko Karunaya Kopina Kantashrito Gopi Bhava Rasam Ritadi Lahari Kalola Magna Mahor Bande Rupa Sanatana Raguyago Shijiva Gopala Go. So Srinivas Acharya is describing how the six Goswamis, they kicked off all association of aristocracy as insignificant. In order to deliver the poor conditioned souls, they accepted loincloths, treating themselves as mendicants, but they were always absorbed. How's it go? They were always absorbed, but they were always absorbed in the mood of the gopis and engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So the idea is this, that they wanted everybody to understand, hey, we're not in this for ourselves. We're not on the take here. We're doing this sincerely. Rupa Goswami, even before he became Rupa Goswami, he gave up tremendous, both Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, they gave up tremendous wealth. You know, they had like a boatload of gold or something like that. Same thing with Raghunath Das Goswami. They gave all that up. They gave all that up to sincerely and seriously practice devotional service. And they kept and they stayed in this very, 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 very renounced position. You know, practically just living on just the bare necessity, only accepting the bare necessities of life. And part of the reason for that was it's very conducive to making spiritual advancement to live in such a condition. But another part of the reason they did that was to show an example. So they wanted everybody to see plainly. Look, hey, everybody, it's kind of like, you know, it's like they're holding your hands up. Look, nothing up my sleeve, you know. I'm not doing this for anything material. I'm practicing this for my own, you know, to advance spiritually and to show you the example that I'm not, you know, trying to get anything from anybody materially. You see, so they set that perfect example. And that's the kind of people I'm more interested to get knowledge from, you see, and follow in their footsteps. I mean, for instance, you know, Lord Chaitanya, I was yesterday at Gaur Purnima, I was standing here in the temple room, and then I decided, for some reason, I decided, let me move up closer, you know. And I moved up right in front of the altar there. I actually wanted to go over to the to this side and stand right in front of Gaur Natai, but it was during the Guru Puja, so the ladies were there, so I didn't want to make any waves. But then I immediately, you know, within a few seconds, I remember, wait a second, you know, this is good. This is good enough. Lord Chaitanya, he worshipped Lord Jagannath. If it was good enough for Lord Chaitanya, it's good enough for me. So I was standing in front of the altar with Jagannath Baladev Subhadra and just remembering how, Lord Chaitanya worshipped Lord Jagannath. And I was remembering that pastime where Lord Chaitanya went into the first time when he reached Jagannath Puri, and he went into the temple. And he went into the temple, and when he saw Lord Jagannath, he fainted. I think Amala Bhakta mentioned, somebody in one of the readings maybe touched upon this and mentioned, he fainted in ecstasy. He was like, he saw Lord Jagannath and he went into ecstatic trance, basically. He didn't faint in the material sense, but he went into, an ecstatic state of consciousness. And, so this is, who I'm taking my inspiration from. I mean, people like Prabhupada, the predecessor acharyas, the six Goswamis, Lord Chaitanya, they're worshipping Krishna. They're not like interested in this. We never hear anything about the Big Bang. And here's another point, okay? What is a Big Bang going to do? What is a point going to do for you anyway? Here's a point, okay? Here's a point right here. What has this point ever done for me or anybody else in the past or will do in the future? Follow what I'm saying? What's the benefit of a point? A point's not going to do anything for anybody ever, you see? But a supreme person, there's some hope in this particular way of understanding life and living. It makes perfect sense. It makes great sense to, because this is not an adequate presentation. This is like a super big subject, and so much more can be said about this and in a more sophisticated way. But the basic idea is that it makes great sense to do what we're doing, to pursue following, surrendering, taking shelter of this understanding that we are, that there is a Supreme Personality of Godhead, we're His eternal servants. The real purpose of life is to try to do things to please Him and avoid doing things that displease Him. It's an intelligent, logical and reasonable way, understanding of life to accept and go forward with. And there's nothing that from what I can understand, there's nothing that the scientists or anybody else can come up with that, really is strong, very compelling arguments or reasons to dissuade me or anybody else from that conviction. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yeah.
I guess this is more of a one-on-one conversation for you. Do you know what the Higgs boson Do you know what the Higgs boson particle is?
Say that again.
The Higgs boson particle. It's been dubbed the God particle. Essentially, it's somewhere in the Middle East. There's this big thing called the Hadron Particle Collider, okay. And what they do is they take an atom and they accelerate it for years.
Particle accelerator.
Yeah, and get it going really fast, and they collide it together, and it creates this particle that is known as the Higgs boson particle, and they call it the God particle because it's that infinite density, and it's observable. And there's also another thing called the Kabal, which I believe is in Israel, the big black cube. Scientifically, we have taken samples from it and determined that has observational evidence to dictate the antimatter, essentially. So we could understand that, and that has that's the zero volume that this guy was referencing to, because that's actually what holds the physical universe together. I think it's 60% of our particles are held together by antimatter, but it's unobservable by science. We call it black matter. NASA has their own explanation for it. But essentially, that's the darkness holding us together. But the boson particle is the light, and that's how we have observed this theory of the Big Bang, essentially, because it's only through light observation and how it travels. Unfortunately, dark matter, antimatter, whatever, has no light, and it actually travels faster than the speed. Therefore, all these ancient ideas.
Okay, so even if all that stuff's true, I'm not a physicist, I don't know. So even if all that stuff is true, where does that come from? What's the origin, what's the cause of those phenomena or those things that you're referring to?
In my field of study, we call it creationism. So it's God. That's why that's the closest thing we have to consciously understanding this. I just wanted to let you know that. And
you might have a different God product that you're kind of buying into, but yeah. Yeah.
Well, we could call it the Krishna particle. I mean, originally, I'm not going to say the word because it was the God explicitive particle is what the original founder wanted to name it, because it raised more questions than answers. But it's what we have in this time, and I believe that is a gift, direct gift from Krishna personally. Just thought I'd let y'all know. Science rules.
Okay. So we'll wrap it up. 8:15. Kuntaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Where you can continue to do things.